So I'm experiencing that we don't have a rapport going on here. That's what I feel is going on here. But I have no clue what's going on for you, but something's here.
You do bounce back quicker. That's what 2%ers do. It's like it rains on 2%ers. Their train gets cancelled. Their football team loses as well. But they have these, as you alluded to, like you've learned not to let it get you down. This is a different version of you to what it used to be 10 years ago.
So the recognition from an organisational perspective is that our leaders are not stepping up. Maybe they're not communicating with the impact that they need to. They're not engaging and inspiring their teams. And so they're not finding and using their voice. And so for that reason, they're losing people, potentially, or they're not recruiting people because, you know, they don't have that attractiveness or that respect. And so there's something wrong around how the leaders are showing up.
Welcome to the Connected Leadership Podcast, hosted by Andy Lapata, the show where Andy and his guests explore the many ways in which relationships impact business decisions, make leaders' jobs easier, and help you to progress your career.
Hello, and welcome to the Connected Leadership Podcast. I'm Andy Lapata. Thank you very much for joining me. My guest today has 25 years' experience in leadership communications. She's the author of two books, and she is an expert on gravitas. Yes, that word gravitas. You decide whether I've got it or not, but it's something we can all become a little bit obsessed with. And we worry about, do people take me seriously? Do I have credibility? Are my ideas landing as they should be? And if we obsess too much about gravitas, it's quite possible that can get in the way of being our authentic selves and really connecting with people in the way that we want to and that we need to. So the topic of gravitas goes to the heart of professional relationships, as do so many of the things that we talk about here. So that's what we're going to focus on today. I've got to be really serious and sensible, and I've got to be really credible in what I say and ask the right questions, because I'm joined by the author of Leading with Gravitas, Antoinette Dale Henderson. Antoinette, welcome to the Connected Leadership Podcast. I hope I'm displaying enough gravitas for you.
You always display gravitas, Andy. Thank you so much. It's amazing to be here with you today.
And I'm delighted to have you on the show. We're good friends and we have so many great conversations. We've discovered more and more over the years how much the work that we both do interweaves with each other. You know, as I've just said, the focus that you have really feeds into the work that I do, and I think vice versa as well. So it made just so much sense to have you on the show. So I've talked a lot about gravitas, a little bit tongue in cheek, but with a very serious eye on it as well. I'm probably mixing parts of the body, let alone mixing metaphors there. But let's start with the basics. What is gravitas, and how do we get it? Can we go out and buy it in a shop?
Great questions. Well, my definition of gravitas is the ability to command respect, get taken seriously, and get your voice heard, all whilst holding on to your own authentic self, back to the authenticity word that you talked about just now. And no, we can't go and get it in a shop. Wouldn't it be nice if we could just pop into a shop and said, oh yes, I'll have a box of gravitas, please. Or let me have my gravitas cloak so that I can wrap it around me, just like something like Harry Potter, and then all of a sudden have this amazing thing. No, that's not possible, but it is absolutely learnable and acceleratable. And when I decided a long time ago now to decode this word gravitas and turn it into a skill that people could learn and accelerate, of course, I started by looking at, well, where does the word come from? And I found the definition in the dictionary, which many people do. You know, you reach for the dictionary, and what it says there is, it says weight. Okay. So I was like, okay, so weight and seriousness and depth. And I thought, all right, so that's great, but imagine if we were like weighty and serious and with depth all the time. We wouldn't really connect very well, to use your word, Andy. And so I drilled down further, and it's an old-fashioned word. It comes from Roman times, so the Latin word. And it originally meant like a statesmanlike quality. And again, when I looked up the definition, I was like, oh, well, that's not really going to fly, is it? In a 21st century world, imagine if we're all statesman-like all the time, particularly us women. It's not going to work either. And so I drilled down further and I realized actually the word gravitas has got two different words within it, which then became the root of the research that I did that then became the program, the book and the keynotes and everything that followed.
So I'm laughing to myself because I know that regular listeners will be very familiar with what I'm going to say next. There are two or three things in what you've just said that I want to dig into. So let's try and do that over the course. But before we do, let me ask you, why did you start exploring gravitas?
Okay. So we'll leave the teaser open about those two words that are within the word gravitas. You just leave that
open. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So why? And yeah, people often say to me, well, why did you decide to focus on the word gravitas? And I remember when I first started researching for the book and everything, it wasn't very common in terms of a word, but it certainly was in the industry that I came from. I spent 16 years working in communications and PR. And so I remember when I was 27 years old, long time ago now, and
not that long.
Yeah. No, it actually is. It's all, I can't do the maths, but it's about half my lifetime ago, more. Anyway, I was a senior account manager and I was super ambitious. My whole identity really evolved around my career, and I really wanted to get promoted to account director. That was everything. And it was appraisal time, and I remember it was my boss, Neil, and it was really difficult because we were really good friends. We're still actually really good friends, despite what happened at the time. And so he took me into a meeting room, sat me down, and he said, okay, so Antoinette, it's time to do your appraisal. And I was like, yes, I know. And he said, look, Antoinette, look, well done. You know, you're doing amazingly. You're ticking all the boxes on the job description and very good. And I was like, yes. And I was like, oh, I'm not sure whether this is going to go the way I thought it was going to go. And he said, however, because he didn't say but, because he'd been on all the management courses that say never use the word but he said however instead. And I was like, that's the same really. So what are you saying, Neil? And he said, however, you're not going to get promoted this time. And I was like, okay, why? And he said, well, what you need to work on for you to become an account director and join the management team and all those things is you really need to work on your gravitas. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, well, that's never come up before. And what actually is that? And I still now remember feeling so deflated and powerless, really, because I had been given a piece of feedback that I needed to be something that I wasn't, but I didn't really know what it was that I needed to be or do. So, you know, I had the information, but I didn't have the power. And that was really hard. You know, I had to go back into the office and face everyone and all that. And at that time, it was really gutting. And so the words just stayed in my head and circulated and around. And then in the end, you know, I did get promoted. And then I went traveling and it all became a bit less intense. And then a few years later, by this point, I was an executive coach. And I remember there was three coaching sessions that I had all on the same day for an investment bank up in Birmingham. And so I sat down, and each time the three people, their two-hour coaching sessions, came in, sat down across from me and said, look, Antoinette. And I was like, what would you like to work on today? And every single one of them, oh, Antoinette, I'm being told I need to work on this thing called gravitas. Any ideas? And so that became my why, really. It's like, okay, well, look, clearly this is an issue that's affecting not just me from back then. It's affecting people who want to aspire to leadership positions, but there's something they're holding them back. So that was the why. And then I went out and did all the research to decode it. And then the rest is history, really.
And you said, I think, that you're still in touch with the boss at the time. Was it Neil? What does he think about the work you're doing now?
Well, he's actually the godfather of my first daughter.
Oh, lovely.
And so he came along to her naming ceremony and he actually did a speech for Zoe and he wrote a poem and everything. So, you know, we're really, really, really good mates. And he came along to the launch of the first edition of the book, skulked in at the back. And I was like, Neil, my revenge. Got him up to the front. I was like, right, Neil, tell the story. And so what does he think? Do you know what? I think he's proud of me. He says that quite a lot. And I'm grateful to him because if that hadn't have happened, then none of this might have happened.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
so yeah.
It's the toughest things, isn't it? The greatest gifts.
Yeah. I was a guest on a podcast recording last night and that was about mentoring because that's the new book. And we were talking about what mentors have given me. And we were talking about the gift of honesty and the gift of really brutal feedback. From what you've said, and we're going a little bit off topic, but I always think that's worthwhile if hopefully there's something of value in there. From what you've said, you got part of the gift because Neil told you what he's perceived you as lacking, but not necessarily how to go about gaining gravitas. But yeah, I think we should celebrate all honest feedback, which is well-intentioned because it allows us to grow.
That's right. And, you know, you saying that, it kind of reminded me a few years later, Neil and I were like in a taxi going somewhere and I desperately wanted my then boyfriend to propose and it had been 10 years. So I was like, and again, it was really affecting my sense of self. And he said, but Antoinette, do you know what? I think you might be a bit depressed. He just left it there once again. And I think the well-intended thing that you said there, Andy, is that it was clear that it was. And I think that the absence of anything that followed it up was basically saying, it's a bit like coaching, really. Here's some information. You go fix it. You go do something with that. And I think that's different. So I knew that he had the belief. I think that's different from what I often hear with people who I work with is that people get given feedback and it's often women, by the way, you know, you need to be more confident or you need to, be more assertive or you need to put your big girl pants on or you need to have more impact or just be yourself or opposite. They get told, you need to rein in a bit, you know, you're just a bit too much. And you know, all the guys get told, you know, you need to just bring it, you know, man up. And people get given all this really what is quite clear, direct feedback, but they don't get given the sort of those, therefore, what you can do is, and specifically it's in these, they don't get given information around, well, it's in these instances. And actually, if you were to do more of this or less of that, then this would be the impact. And so the feedback is so clumsy and that just really gets to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But then if feedback was amazing, then we wouldn't have a job, would we, Andy, you know?
that's quite possible. You touched on gender a couple of times now because you talked about statesman and you talked about just now women getting it more than men. Is gravitas more easily afforded to some groups? I'm saying some groups very politically. Let's just say white men rather than to other groups. And in particular, is gravitas harder to establish, harder to be seen, more important to women than it is to men?
I believe traditionally, and yeah, originally it was seen as a statesman-like quality. And some of that belief system clearly still remains. And, you know, the perception of gravitas often is it's like a fine wine. It needs to kind of emerge over the years. And it then becomes bestowed on the elderly gentleman who has reached that position. You know, he's got his own car park spot in the car park and, you know, things like that. And so that is traditionally the case. And some of that belief system clearly remains, you know, unconscious bias. There's so much talk about all of that. And so we, without even knowing it, sometimes attribute different qualities to different genders and different groups, as you say. And that need not necessarily be the case. But if you kind of fast forward to, you know, the 80s and whatever, you know, a lot of women who are wanting to become senior leaders, there's been a lot of talk about this. You know, it's like, well, if you want to become a leader, then you need to be more man. And so that was a mistake that a lot of women made back then, and society and fashion, even, you know, big shoulder pads, and, you know, women would get told, Margaret Thatcher was coached, wasn't she, to kind of lower her voice. And so that was then. So now fast forward to today, I work with people of all genders. And my Gravitas masterclasses that I run in organizations tend to be a mix of people of all genders. But the people who choose to work with me, so the people who come on my public courses and approach me for individual coaching, they do tend to be women. And it's often because they have been told, well, for you to get promotion, or you didn't get the position, and the reason for it is gravitas. And sometimes the interpretation of that is actually what they meant is because I'm not a man. And so I'm super clear, though, is that, you know, that this is not about you becoming someone else or being more man, not at all. This is about you connecting with your own inner identity, starting from those foundations and then working out from there.
It's interesting that you and I was going to ask you about this, that you say that when you run programs within organizations, people, it sounds like from what you say, people are told that they're going to come along to them, whereas your public courses, women predominantly choose to come along. Mm. Why do your clients, the companies, why do they bring you in, and how do they select who comes on your program, and what's the response of those people? What are they expecting? Do you get some of the, particularly the men, thinking, well, I don't belong here, I have gravitas already naturally? Or do you have to win their respect and win their buy-in, or do you find you have it straight away?
All right. So why do organizations bring me in? I get contacted by organizations because they realize that their leaders, there's something missing in how their leaders are showing up. And so, you know, sometimes it's the entire leadership team, and sometimes it's individuals who get selected or who put themselves forward for the program. That's always best if they nominate themselves. Anyways, so the recognition from an organizational perspective is that our leaders are not stepping up. Maybe they're not communicating with the impact that they need to. They're not engaging and inspiring their teams, and so that they're not finding and using their voice. And so for that reason, then they're losing people potentially, or they're not recruiting people because, you know, they don't have that attractiveness or that respect. And so that there's something wrong around how the leaders are showing up. And that's on and offline, you know, that's in person and virtually as well. Clearly there's the added challenge around doing it, that if you're speaking online. And so there's something about that, that they're not showing up and they're not communicating with the gravitas that we need them to. So therefore they're not being perceived as leaders. So therefore they're not representing our organization in the best possible way. So that's why I get brought in. And then what response do I get, and how does that compare gender-wise? I don't think so. I think it, you know, the forward-thinking organizations that I choose to work with and who choose to work with me, they're kind of beyond that now. And so they're already usually doing quite a lot of work around diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. And so that they are actively taking steps to work towards equity. And so the culture speaks to that. And so then the individuals who come, what I'll do is, before people come on any kind of courses, they complete a questionnaire. It's like, well, what are your objectives? What's getting in the way? What three things do you want to have different as a result of whatever it is that we're doing, and how would you measure that? And the responses that I get, clearly I then bespoke the course to those responses, but the responses that I get, regardless of gender, are generally the same. So people will then say, if anonymous space, I'm really struggling with this and I'm feeling quite unconfident. And what I want is to feel like when I could speak up in a meeting, I get heard. I'm sick of getting interrupted, all those kinds of things. So they then become across the board, regardless of gender. you know, you'll have some people that come along and they sort of sit there and they're like, come on, you know, what have you got to show me? You know, those kinds of people. But yeah, we bring them round eventually.
We all find those people occasionally on our sessions. I talked at the very beginning, and then you picked it up in your first answer, about the balance between perceived gravitas and the ability to connect, to be authentic. I think we both touched on humour in that sense. And actually, I was almost deliberately even more lighthearted than normal. I always like to have a laugh and a giggle with my guests. But I think saying things like, can you buy it in a shop? That's not the sort of question I would normally ask. But I think there was part of me being really cheeky on purpose as we started our conversation. What's the relationship between humour and gravitas? Can you still command respect? Can you still have gravitas if people don't take you seriously? Or does humour actually not prevent people taking you seriously, and it can be part of building respect and credibility?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it goes back to that original definition of gravitas, or gravitas, which is hilarious in itself, I find. Americans call it gravitas, and I'm like chuckling on the inside. Anywho, it basically boils down to a term that I've created called managed authenticity. And you might think, well, that sounds like a bit of a contradiction in terms. How the hell, if you're being authentic, you're just being yourself. How can you just be yourself if you're managing that? And so really what it boils down to is being able to flex and adapt and tailor how you show up depending on the situation that you're in. And so if you are in a situation, for example, where you're communicating a change that in different ways is going to affect the audience that you're talking to, and you predict that there will be a level of concern, at least for some of them, you're not going to go in there cracking jokes, are you? So equally, though, if you're wanting to go into a situation, have people like chill out, relax, get yourself relaxed as well, and you feel like it's appropriate, then the humour will naturally bubble up and be infectious. And so it's about learning how to read the situation and read where you're at as well, and then knowing that you have the power to choose. And authenticity is so important. It's one of the segments of the Gravitas methodology. It's one of the chapters of the book. It's a central part of the program. And it's because if we are not authentic, if we meet people and we think that they're playing a role, or faking it till you make it, which is an expression that I just really think is so unhelpful, we can sense it, we can feel it. And sometimes we give them the benefit of the doubt because we're like, yeah, clearly you're nervous. So, you know, or maybe you're just trying this on for size. But if we sense that someone's like continuing to be inauthentic, we can feel it. And then ultimately that will lead to a lack of trust and a lack of connection and all those things. So it's about authenticity. It's about knowing that you can flex, and then humor has a beautiful place within that.
Enhance your mentoring skills with the Financial Times Guide to Mentoring by Andy Lapata and Dr. Ruth Gotian. Secure your copy early by pre-ordering today on Amazon or your preferred bookseller.
As you said that, I just had the picture, and I'm sure, I know this was me back in the day as well. I have that picture of that early 20-year-old boy in the power suit who is trying to be a 50-year-old man in the way they engage with people. And there's probably fewer people in the world that lack gravitas more than that particular type. But if you have the same young man who is just himself and relaxed and can have a very easygoing, lighthearted conversation, being serious where they need to, that person's more likely to have gravitas than the one who's really trying to portray that impression, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's not easy. And some people are born with the ability to do that. somehow, whether it's nature or nurture, or combination of all those things, they have that charm and ease and just inner confidence. And it's a very attractive quality. But most people, I think, don't. You know, we have to learn it. We have to have a few knocks along the way, sadly, to get to that point. And it's an interesting one because it's so subtle, isn't it? Because that ease that you were describing, I think that sometimes people look at that and they're like, how dare you be so chill? You know, how come you haven't had to work on it in the way that I have had to? And then sometimes that ease or that naturalness, you know, can then flip over into a level of arrogance, which then switches people off as well. So it's just such a subtle thing.
I wonder, actually, and you talked about context a few minutes ago, how much context dependent it is as well. Where you are comfortable, you're more likely to have more gravitas. So just thinking, as you were saying that, I was just thinking about myself, and I think there will be parts of my life where the people that engage with me there will think of me as the words you express, charming, have gravitas, at ease, and so forth. I'm pretty sure there are parts of my life where people would be astonished at that image of me, because I might be more at ease and more comfortable in one than the other. So can gravitas come with context, and can we be a different person in different spaces?
Very much. Yeah. At the beginning of some of my sessions, I'll get people to rate themselves. So I take people through the methodology and they score themselves from 1 to 10. But I will say, you know, this is context specific. So there are some situations where you'll feel like you can rate yourself 10 out of 10 on gravitas and it's all groovy. But then there are other situations that are probably more related to your development goals, where you're feeling out of your comfort zone, where you are feeling that your gravitas is compromised. And so they're going to rate themselves lower on in those situations. And it's in those situations that sometimes people feel like they need to fake it till they make it, or they just feel totally out of their comfort zone. And so they're just not coming across at their best. And so I can recognize what you're saying there, Andy. You know, I think that it's nice to get to a point where it's like, well, in this room with these people or on this stage, I'm not feeling at ease, as opposed to all the time, you know, or at this stage of my life or in this role, I'm not feeling at ease. It's horrible when you come to the realization that you just feel like a round peg in a square hole, and it's just a really uncomfortable place to be, isn't it? And I think that that's our responsibility, but it's also the responsibility that people around us to create an environment that is more welcoming. But maybe that's a wider topic.
But yes, it probably is. But that's absolutely fine, and it makes perfect sense, because if we can start recognizing where we are more at ease in different contexts, then we know where we have to focus our work. And what do I need to do differently in this context? And what do I need from the people around me in order to have that comfort, so that my true self and my gravitas self, if that's a phrase, could really come out?
Yeah.
I want to bridge across to the opposite space, that space where you are very much at ease. And again, I can look back across my career with so much of what we're talking about. That time when you're really comfortable with everyone around you and effectively your guard comes down. Now, we've talked about the positive side of being authentic, of being your real self and connecting with people in that way. And I talk a lot about that. But there is a downside to that potentially as well, where you forget the context in which you're in. And particularly if you're in a professional environment, and you feel very friendly with the people around you. So how much can our letting our guard down, being ourselves, inappropriate humor as an example, becoming a little bit less professional, impact our gravitas as well? And how can we find that right balance where we are professional enough in a professional environment without losing our authenticity and our ability to connect?
Yeah. And I think those situations often happen in an organization when people get promoted or perhaps they join an organization and they've got a new role. And so they therefore have a different level of responsibility. Maybe people who were previously mates, they're now having to, you know, lead or give quite challenging feedback to. And so those situations, it's like the relationship, the dynamic changes. I think also when that's often when the imposter syndrome rears its head, when people feel like, oh, I'm in a different place, I'm being required to do a different thing, and all of a sudden I don't know how to do that. And so those are the kinds of situations.
It's really about how we manage those situations where we're not, where the imposter syndrome kicks in, but the opposite, where we're totally at ease, we've let our guard down to a degree where we become a little bit too familiar with people, perhaps we become their friend, the humor changes and so forth. How do you maintain your gravitas? Actually, a really good example of this, and one that I've always been very careful about, doesn't really impact me so much these days, but I've always told other people to be careful about, is when you're out drinking and socializing.
Yeah.
With colleagues or with clients, and you're drinking to excess, and trust me, I've seen a lot of gravitas fall away from people in those times. So that type of example, or just when you're really become close to a client or close to a colleague or whatever it might be, can over familiarity impact our gravitas?
Yeah, I absolutely it can. And so therefore it's again, it comes back to context and thinking, well, ultimately, what is my role in this situation and how do I want to be perceived and where's my line? And so it's important to partly bear in mind the whole DE&I perspective of this and, you know, what might be humor and bants down the pub with your mates could be absolutely inappropriate in a different situation. And you're right, you know, people will let down their guard down the pub, they've had a few too many drinks, and then all that credibility that they've spent a long time building up over time then just disappears. All the trust that they've generated with someone, they put a word wrong, and then that gets lost over the night. So I think it's about reminding ourselves when we're in a work context that we are in a work context. And so there's a line that perhaps we don't want to cross. It's the same as humor is one example, but another example of this is vulnerability. And I remember when Brené Brown started talking about vulnerability years ago and her TED talk came out and all of that. And I remember thinking, wow, vulnerability is the secret to leadership and to authentic connections. And so I'm going to go forth, be vulnerable. And it was when I first piloted the Gravitas program, actually. And I remember I got to the end of the first day and I said to everyone, oof, you know, I was really nervous at the beginning of today and I didn't really know how it was going to turn out. And that was the case because it was a pilot. But what their boss then fed back to me about later on was she said, you shouldn't have said that, Antoinette, because that group of people are in conflict and they're looking for any chink in the armor. And with you saying that, you undermined your own credibility in saying that. And so I was like, I thought that's really interesting, is that there's a lot to be said around vulnerability. And, you know, I think it's really important to create psychological safety for managers and leaders, especially to share when they're feeling vulnerable. But again, there's the line. It's about thinking, well, what is going to be the impact on these people if I share this? And what's going to be the impact on how people see me? And so it's okay to say, you know, we've got changes coming up. And to be honest with you, you know, I do feel nervous about them, but I know that we have a plan. It's like, we've got these changes coming up. I'm feeling really, really nervous. It's keeping me awake at night. And actually, I had a bit of a cry before I came in. You know, that's not going to instill confidence or followership in the people that you say that to. So there's a line.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think rather than get into a conversation about it, I think to acknowledge for people listening, social media activity would also play into this beware of who you are and where your gravitas might slip space as well.
So true. So true. And, you know, I still now, I'm like, what is my Instagram for? On the one hand, people really value the gravitas tips and the content that comes from the books and all of that stuff. But what people seem to really engage in, and where I get much more kind of likes and all of those things, is with me with my daughters, or me eating a pizza, or me gurning at the camera. And I'd still think, you know, is this the right balance? I actually don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that.
No, that's, again, another, I think, a whole conversation. And the reason, I mean, we could dig into it, it's very much on topic, but there are a couple of things I want to talk about as well. And I think social media stuff we talked about a lot, and we'll talk about again. I want to be really specific on these couple of questions that I've got for you now and focus on those. You mentioned having imposter syndrome in unfamiliar situations. And there are certain particularly uncomfortable situations where people want to find gravitas and perhaps work harder to do so. And I thought it might be useful to take a couple of examples of that and how you would recommend people can approach it and make sure that they naturally display gravitas in the way they would want to in those situations. The first one that springs to mind is in a job interview scenario.
Yeah.
How can someone who is naturally most likely going to be very nervous, wants to impress, there's a risk of over-egging that particular pudding and losing gravitas by doing so. How do you come across in an authentic, natural, human engaging way, but with gravitas in the job interview?
It's all about preparation. And if people think, oh, well, yeah, you know, then don't do that because you really won't be doing yourself a favor at all. And so in a succinct way, I have an acronym that I share with people that they find really useful when preparing for an interview, and it's called OPRAS. And so OPRAS stands for, firstly, what's my objective? And so it's like, well, my objective in this interview is to get the role. And so it's clear. And it could also be, I want to come across with gravitas and I want to create connection. And then you think, well, for the P for OPRAS is people or person. So you think, well, who is the person who's interviewing me? What keeps them up at night? What are their objectives? Why are they interested in talking to me? And so that means that you not only understand what you want to achieve, but you also understand where the other person is going to be coming from. R of OPRAS stands for a role. What role am I playing? And it's at that point you can think about, from the managed authenticity perspective, what are the different kinds of roles am I wanting to demonstrate authentically in this interview? So is it going to be important for me to come across as a strategist? And if that's the case, then how will that, because if you think about strategists, that will naturally then affect the words that you use. You can already hear in my voice, I'm thinking about the word strategist. I'm getting quite precise in my speech. I'm using quite precise gestures. I'm using short points. And so it will naturally, authentically show up in how you communicate. Equally, if it's going to be really important for you to demonstrate that you're a creative person, a creative leader, imagine that you're wearing a creative hat, and naturally that would authentically come through in your voice. And so that's R. A of OPRAS is attitude. What attitude am I going into this interview with? And so you might think, yeah, I want to be positive and I want to be can-do. And that might be absolutely spot on. But it might actually be in an interview, if it's for a role that is going to require someone who's quite circumspect and careful, you might want more of a precise, measured, controlled attitude. H of OPRAS stands for eight. Hear, what am I going to hear? And so one of the things that breaks connection, affects negatively authenticity, and means that people are less likely to actually get the job is if they're not listening to the person who's talking to them. So it reminds the person to just stay connected. And then finally, the S of OPRAS stands for, what am I going to say? And so those things combined mean that you'll have thought about, well, what do I want to achieve as a result of the interview? And therefore, how will I continue to bring my authentic self throughout it?
That makes a lot of sense. I think that preparation is absolutely key, and that pre-thinking would offset that tendency, that temptation to act and be someone you're not because you're trying to respond to something that's happening in the moment. The second scenario I had in mind, I've got a feeling that some of the answer, at the least, would be very similar, but that's in giving a presentation. And it doesn't have to be the kind of keynote talk that we you and I are used to doing, but the leader who has to stand and talk to the company report, you know, the AGM about the company report and performance and so forth, they definitely want to portray gravitas there. They're going to be really focused on how people are going to perceive them and see them. Preparation is obviously going to be a key part of that. How do they go about that? And how do they ensure that, again, because I think the danger in that scenario, and it is similar to the interview scenario, is that we over-focus on the gravitas in this case particularly, and we forget about connecting with people and engaging with them.
Yeah, and I think that the gravitas holds within it connecting with people. And so it's not one without the other. You know, another component of the gravitas methodology is connection. And so it's part of it. How to bring that to a presentation or a stage? Yeah, what I was talking about with Oprah was more about the content of the words that actually come out of your mouth. But the complementary part of it is how you show up physically on stage. And often people in corporate or in organizations, you know, they'll fixate on what they're going to say. They create a stellar deck, or they put a deck together from other decks, usually. And then they turn up on stage and they just sort of click through the slides one by one. And they think the slides are their presentation, which isn't the case. It's that they are their presentation. And so therefore, then that's when the more nonverbal embodied part of gravitas comes in. And if there's one thing that I would recommend people do to connect with their gravitas is to remember to breathe, and just like I'm doing now. And because often, you know, when we're up in our head or like thinking about all the content of what we're going to say, we're nervous, we go up in our head, we go into our own little bubble, and we rush through as quickly as possible, and we scuttle off, and that our everything is undermined in terms of gravitas then. So to do the breath work, anything like yoga or exercise or anything, you know, learning how to sing, anything that's going to help you connect with your breath will naturally calm you down and influence the resonance of your voice. You can hear it now in my voice. And so there's the breath part of it, and then there's the learning to stand in a relaxed way, both feet pointed on the ground. Before we started this interview, didn't we, Gravita, Andy, you asked me to, I lowered my chair, and it was so that I could put both my feet on the ground. And so there's that part of it. And then there's, what do you do to stand up, to engage, to move around? How do you use gestures? How do you keep your body language open? All of those things will help you physiologically, will also help your presentation, and mean that your audience then also feel relaxed and then more able to connect with you in an embodied way.
So the Amy Cuddy school of thought in terms of the power pose and so forth, is that part of it, or is your approach something slightly different?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Amy Cuddy, she done some great work, and she has influenced a whole generation of power posers and a whole generation of speakers also who bring that into their talks. And you know, I've done that myself. Absolutely, you know, physiologically, if you are using an open gesture, whether it's a power pose or just opening your whole body up, that will then influence what's going on in your head. And so for sure, it's all part of it. But at the same time, it's like, well, you don't need to go onto a stage and like strut and stand there with your hands on your hips and do the whole Tony Robbins loud breathing. It do those things, but remember to hold on to your authenticity while you're doing it as well. And therefore, the more you do it, the more it becomes part of your natural way of doing things all the time, even if you're standing in the queue in Tesco. Then that will then mean that it's authentic, and people don't think, who the hell's this person? Where do they come from?
I just want to see you in a queue at Tesco now. Just to finish off, I was glad you said just a minute or two ago that connection is a core part of gravitas and not separate from it. And that takes us back to where we started and our definition, because I bet you thought I'd forgotten that little tease. and the two words within. I hadn't, and I thought that would be a nice way to round things out. So can you just go back to where you were, and you were talking about gravitas contains two words within. So what is gravitas?
Yes, nicely done. So yeah, I thought, okay, well, I need to delve further into this word. And I realized that actually gravitas has got two words within it. Firstly, it's got the word gravis. And when I looked up the word gravis, that means weight. And so it's naturally going into my voice. My voice is going deeper. But when I get people to really connect with their gravis, it's about connecting with the gravity that is running through them, that is connecting them to the ground. And so you've got that groundedness, which is absolutely the part that people then take you seriously for, that enables you to command respect. But then the other part of the word gravitas is the word vita, which is a totally different energy. Vita means life. And so life, again, you can hear my voice lifting. Life is more about, I call it your life force. And so if you connect with your life force, and sometimes when we're rushing, we're busy and we're stressed, we disconnect from this amazing energy that we always have within us, which lifts you up. And so if you've got the gravitas that's grounding you, and then you've got the vita that's lifting you up, if you think about physically, people might be just feeling that right now with their feet on the ground, but also their chest lifted, you've got a beautiful balance there between the groundedness and the energy.
And that connects beautifully to what you were just saying about body language and so forth as well. It's exactly what you were talking about. So that connected together even better than I expected. Antoinette, as ever, you carry gravitas in the way that you talk about what you do. You connect authentically as well. You've given us a lot to think about in our conversation today. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for joining me on the Connected Leadership Podcast.
It's been an absolute delight. Thank you, as always, for your astute questioning, Andy. And yeah, it's been lovely connecting with your listeners as well.
Thank you so much to Antoinette. It's a really fascinating topic. I like that juxtaposition of the weight and the life force in that last answer from Antoinette, because we can obsess a little bit too much or connect gravitas too much with weight, which is what Antoinette said at the beginning. And that means that gravitas is all about being serious and being the sage and so forth. But when you connect it to that life force, that changes the definition. And that goes to a lot of what Antoinette shared there. I hope we gave you a good mixture of food for thought and some practical tips as well that you can take away. And if you've got any questions on it, if you've got any thoughts on it, we'll be posting some quotes and some clips from this on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. I cannot call it X. So please feel free to join the conversation there. Feel free to email me. I never really say this, but you are always welcome to email me, andy@lopata.co.uk, with any questions or thoughts on the episodes, and share the episode, rate, review, all those lovely things that help us. And whatever you do, join us again next week for another episode of the Connected Leadership Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Leadership Podcast. If you found this valuable, please subscribe, tell your colleagues and friends, share on social media, and post a review on the podcast channel you use to listen to it. And of course, join us again soon for another interesting interview and great connected leadership tips.